Thanks for downloading the free feed of Sunday Night's Main Event. If you'd like the entire show commercial-free, please sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Connor hogties the cowboy. We are 1 week away from the Royal Rumble. We're ready, but is WWE? And we honor wrestling's soul man. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday Night's Main Event, Canada's premier wrestling radio program, coming at you on TSN Radio. My name is Jason Agnew, and this week I have someone in studio to chat with, which is lovely. Happy to be joined for the first time in just a tag team effort, one of our co-hosts from the All Elite Weekly podcast, and more importantly, he'll tell you, le champion of the six-pack challenge, Joe Aguinaldo.
Thanks, Jay, and on today's show, we will be previewing next week's Royal Rumble. We'll also have one of our favorite wrestling personalities, Quinn McKay from Ring of Honor. And speaking of the Rumble, yours truly, the six-pack champion, takes on my co-host, Jason Agnew, in the six-pack challenge.
Yeah, it's coming back to me because, honestly, no one can defeat you. And if I don't win this time, we might just retire the championship or just start inviting fans and listeners to play against you because you've been undefeated for far too long here. This is a bit of a Goldberg streak, and we're not even adding in dates. You just keep winning. Also on today's show, your regular co-host, Dan the Mouth of Vransky, will join us to take a deeper dive into the career of Rocky Johnson. He's more than just The Rock's dad. We'll talk to Mouth, who also doubles as our historian on the show, about Rocky Johnson. In an hour or two, don't forget, it is the first matchup of round three in the Turnbuckle Trivia Tournament. So get ready to take a dive back to the rock and wrestling era and round three, all about female performers in wrestling. So you can be sure this is going to be difficult because in the 80s, it wasn't like today. This is going to be difficult. We will get to that in hour two. All that and more. But first, though, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Joe and I will get you all up to date on the week in pro wrestling news. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. You're doing so on TSN Radio.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event, getting you updated on what happened this week in the world of pro wrestling. And, well, we'll start things off with a sad note, of course. Rocky Soulman Johnson, the father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, passed away this past Wednesday. His friend and head of Cauliflower Alley Club, B. Brian Blair, said Rocky had not been feeling well for the past couple of weeks, but at present no cause of death has been reported. Now, Johnson was born Wade Douglas Bowles in Amherst, Nova Scotia. Along with being a pro wrestler, he worked as a sparring partner for boxers such as Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, hence why boxing combinations and the Ali Shuffle were part of his in-ring mannerisms. Now, despite his bodybuilding frame, he was a very agile performer and well-known for his tremendous dropkicks.
He legally changed his name to Rocky Johnson during his career, which started in Nova Scotia in 1964. By 1966, he was working the top circuits in Canada. He then hit it big in the 1970s in Los Angeles and as a babyface in Roy Scheider's promotion in San Francisco, working main event programs in many of the U.S. territories such as St. Louis and Memphis. He also made up the short-lived Soul Patrol tag team in the WWF with Tony Atlas and had a quick run with the tag titles. Back when he was based in California, he frequently paired with High Chief Peter Maivia as a tag team and coincidentally ended up marrying his daughter, i.e. Peter's, out of Maivia, and the couple had one child they named Dwayne Johnson, who later became famous as the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, The Rock. Rocky Johnson was 75 years old.
Yeah, and it's kind of unfortunate that, you know, a lot of the headlines that I did see, being here in Canada, there was a bit more of an emphasis on this passing because, you know, for instance, like, my girlfriend works for an entertainment television show, and because of The Rock's connection, this was reported. Otherwise, if it was just a wrestler from the 70s, there would be no report of it whatsoever. But your main headline is always, oh, Dad of The Rock. And there's a lot more to Rocky Johnson than just that.
Absolutely. I mean, like, as you know, like, I'm going to be hitting 50, so I watched a lot of, you know, the territory wrestling back in the day, and And actually, my first memory of Rocky Johnson was as Sweet Ebony Diamond working under a mask, and I believe it was the Mid-Atlantic Territory. So when I saw this headline, like, it wasn't just, for me, The Rock's dad passed away. It was, you know, legendary wrestler passing away.
Yeah, and I think it is a little different to you, to me, to Mouth, who we're going to have on the show later to go a little bit more in depth into his career, and to anyone listening to this show. I mean, we know a little bit more about Rocky Johnson. But you know what? I have found, though, Joe, that the territories and stars of the territories, unless they found their way, especially here growing up in Toronto, unless they found their way into WWF at the time, not all that well known. It's kind of lost in history.
Yes, I mean, sadly, too, like along with Rocky Johnson, I mean, you know, you had Pampero Firpo pass away recently, who was also big in, like, I think it was big time wrestling in Detroit, even to the Sheik.
Yep.
Kendo Nagasaki, who was huge in the territories in Mid-Atlantic in US, or not USWA, WCCW.
Right.
You know, and so, I mean, it's just like, it's sad that a lot of those legends, you know, don't get the press that, say, a Rocky Johnson would get, you know, because of his association with The Rock.
Of course, yeah. You know what really told that story to me was, I don't know if it was last year or a couple of years ago, Bruiser Brody inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, but just as one of the history items.
I can't tell you how much that bugged me. There was a few of them that went in like that.
Right?
I think, like, Wahoo McDaniel was another one that went in
ridiculous.
Like that. Yeah, big time.
Ridiculous. All right, continuing on here, much to my extreme frustration, immediately after I finished taping last week's edition of the show, news broke about both Marty Scurll and Brian Cage. So let's get you updated here. First of all, in a rather surprising move, Marty Scurll has re-signed with Ring of Honor, but will also be allowed to work with NWA, which is not surprising since the two companies seem to have rekindled their working agreement. Now, despite the original indications that he would be replacing Delirious as lead booker, that is not the case. Marty's going to be working with Delirious on the booking team of Ring of Honor. As for Brian Cage, he lost to RVD in a very lame ref stoppage at Impact's Hard to Kill pay-per-view last Sunday, and just before that, website SoCalUncensored.com reported that he had signed with AEW. Now, this report has both been denied by Cage and his wife, but it does look like he's a free agent and could be headed over to the Cody brand. He's someone, Joe, that AEW seemed to be interested right from the very beginning. I'm not that huge a fan of Brian Cage. Reason being, for me, I think he's gotten too big and bulky and almost like a Scott Steiner way to do the things that were most impressive that he used to do.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think had you asked me this a year ago, I know that AEW, they used to do things called, like, sort of like Haas scouting missions where they would look for really big guys.
Right.
But yeah, Brian Cage just, I just don't see it happening. Like, I don't see him fitting in with that roster.
Yeah, do you see him signing, though?
I wouldn't be entirely shocked because they are in desperate need of some bigger guys.
Yeah.
But that said, I just don't know if Brian Cage is the right guy for them to sign.
Yeah, bigger guys, and along with that, I think more guys now, and that leads us into our next item.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of the Cody brand, Warner Media announced that this week they expanded its relationship with All Elite Wrestling. The television contract has been renegotiated and extended to the year 2023.
Mm-hmm.
It was also announced that a second night of AEW wrestling will be added to programming, but they haven't confirmed which night or which network the show will air on yet. And then the following day, oddly enough, AEW also announced the signing of Taz to a multi-year deal. I'm expecting Taz to be used in the commentary role, which will make Mark Andrade very, very happy.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mark pointed out he really liked the combination of Excalibur and Taz. And honestly, Joe, if you go back and you look at what Taz did before Vince McMahon started getting into his ear, he is a very good commentator. And to me, he's come right back to that state in the limited amount of time he's appeared on AEW.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I was actually watching the 2004 Royal Rumble.
Okay. And just randomly?
Well, yes. And it just, because Taz was on the commentary.
Right, right.
And he was really good.
He's good. Like, yeah, there's no doubt that he's a very good commentator when left onto himself, like just unto himself, right? All right, continuing on, Triple H got caught up in a bit of controversy this week after he answered a question about the potential return of Paige or Edge to the ring by saying Edge has kids, Paige, she probably has some she doesn't know of. Well, Paige wasn't happy with the line, writing on Twitter, "Even my boss jokes about me. No wonder you guys still do it too." Triple H later publicly apologized on Twitter, and he called it a terrible joke. But this will just blow over.
Probably, yeah, but it was pretty bad.
Well, And considering what we've seen of Paige, was it that bad? Anyway, we can move along.
Fair enough. And speaking of bad, it looks like the WWE is headed back to Saudi Arabia. Hooray. Mm. The dates being bandied about are either February 20th or February 27th, but nothing confirmed yet by the WWE. And honestly, I'm more curious to find out or to see which wrestlers will hold true to their quote-unquote never again tweets that you know that they sent out while they were stuck on a plane after the last show.
Yeah, there were a lot of them that were sending those out, maybe not when they were there, but also when they got back, and it was just like never again. And you know, WWE's already set the precedent of people like Daniel Bryan, Kevin Owens, refusing to go.
Yep.
So what happens if the lower card guys refuse to go? Like, honestly, if you're the Revival right now, and you pretty much know that you're leaving, do you go and do this?
No, I wouldn't.
Just say no.
Exactly.
What are they going to do? Are they going to fire you? Great.
Well, you know what? Like, I'm curious, like a guy like, say, Carl Anderson, because I remember him tweeting.
Yes,
that,
that's right.
And obviously that, you know, that the whole OC thing now, right?
Yeah.
So if Carl says, no, I'm not going to go, well, what about Luke Gallows? What if he wants to go? What if AJ Styles wants to go? You know what I mean? Or, hey, what if all three decide, yeah, you know what? Forget it. We're not going to go. I mean, you got to have someone to go, right?
So. Yeah, I don't. And the thing is with, you know, you can only bring back so many guys for these events. I also don't like this timing. I mean, you're at February 20th or 27th. This is the road to WrestleMania. These shows get in the way for me as a fan.
Big time.
If there is anything, any promotion that is dedicated to these silly shows that happen somewhere else that are sort of canon but not really canon, it just obstructs my enjoyment of the actual promotion and product.
Yep.
In an interview with The Sun this week, Cain Velasquez claimed he will be part of the Royal Rumble. He also claimed he's going to win, but that would be pretty shocking and also really disappointing if they were to push that forth. It was also announced on WWE Backstage that Elias has re-signed a multi-year contract with the company. Joe, to me, the Elias signing makes sense. I don't see him as a great draw anywhere else. He's a perfect WWE character. As far as Velasquez goes, I guess he can pop into the Rumble. But I don't think he's the right guy to throw Lesnar out, or win for that matter.
Definitely not win. Throw Lesnar out. I might give some credence to that, maybe.
So you're going
to
be your pick in the six-pack challenge?
You know what? Hey, relax.
Okay,
that's up.
That's the next hour. All right, we're a ways away.
All right, so if you're planning on ordering the NWA Hard Times pay-per-view that is coming up on Friday, January 24th, the main event you'll be seeing is Nick Aldis taking on a member of Villain Enterprises, Flip Gordon. Aldis versus Gordon is being billed as an interpromotional match between the NWA and Ring of Honor. However, it wasn't stated whether or not Aldis would be defending the NWA title.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that he is not defending the NWA title because you really want that to be against Skrull, right? You want to build towards that. To me, though, this, I just can't get out of my head the fact, number one, it's a Friday. Number two, it's just too soon. I mean, they're rolling along with this, with these shows from week to week. And I know you really enjoyed this week's show, you were saying, right?
I did, but I agree with you. I think this pay-per-view, like when I saw it announced, I was like, what? Wait a minute, just had one. And like, let's face it, this is on Royal Rumble weekend.
Yeah.
Right?
This goes right against Rumble Strikes. No thank you.
Exactly.
You guys got to be live at my Rumble Strike show, which I'll tell you, trust me, I'll whore out a little bit later in the show. For those of you that didn't see last weekend's Impact Hard to Kill pay-per-view, which is probably 99% of you, except that one guy in Winnipeg who keeps tweeting me, as suspected, Tessa Blanchard defeated Sami Callihan in the main event to win the Impact Wrestling Championship. Where do they go from here? I'll tell you where. They go back to the past, because Impact made two announcements this week. As if, Joe, they didn't have an identity problem already, they're bringing back the TNA brand for one night only. The TNA theme show will take place in Tampa, Florida on Friday, April the 3rd as part of WrestleCon on WrestleMania weekend. If you'd like to attend the event, tickets go on sale tomorrow. That's Monday at noon. And if you can't make it to the event, they're going to broadcast this whole thing on Fight.tv. Is there anyone, Joe, that misses the TNA brand? This does not have the ECW style nostalgia to it.
No, and you know what? Like, I mean, there was such, I guess, a negative connotation when you said TNA.
Exactly.
Like, I get it from a nostalgia perspective, sort of, but really, because of the negative connotations, I would not want to be associated with that. Like, give it some time. You're starting, I think, to finally get the Impact name out there to a degree, and, you know, you're doing some different stuff with the Tessa Blanchard thing. Yeah, like I think to bring it back to the TNA, like, you know, like the that brand, I'm sorry, I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, it's a very poor idea. There's still a lot of people that refer to it as TNA and they haven't got away from it. And plus it was NWA TNA at the time and they're not associated with NWA now. So this is really, in my opinion, not a great idea, but let's face it, it's Anthem. It's just commonplace. Number two, Impact is bringing back Lockdown. And this, I actually think, is a good idea. This is the All-Steel Cage Match pay-per-view that's going to return on March 28th at a show taking place at St. Clair College in Windsor, Ontario. Now, as much as I say, you're probably looking at me weird in regards to the fact saying that this is a good idea. All I remember about Lockdown is when it first started, Mouth and I both said, this is ridiculous, it's a terrible idea, it's repetitive. But I tell you, for the first few years of Lockdown, these shows delivered every time. And I will say one thing about Impact is I remember when they tried to do three hardcore matches on one show, it would have been about a year and a half ago, and I think a Bound for Glory, and they did different things in each match, and it worked. There's a possibility here to make this work. Hopefully, though, they just don't try to shoot through the cage the whole time with the cameras, because that's horrendous.
Oh, God. Okay, so, the Lockdown name, like them bringing back a Lockdown pay-per-view, that I'm okay with.
Right.
Like the TNA thing, no. Lockdown, cool.
Yes, cool.
Right? That's fine. And now again, I'm not the biggest like gimmick match guy.
No,
so
you don't care for gimmicks.
But I do remember Lockdowns being pretty entertaining. So, you know, this one I'm okay with.
Okay, yeah, so we're 50-50 on what Impact is bringing back from the past. One MMA note before we move along to talking about this week in TV. Joe?
Yep, Conor McGregor made his return to the Octagon last night at UFC 246. This was Conor's first fight since his loss to Khabib Nurmagomedov on October 6, 2018. And hey, it looks like all the proper 12 whiskey drinking, smashing fans' cell phones, and punching old men at a bar was great training as McGregor took out Donald Cerrone in 40 seconds after a knee to the head, a bunch of shoulder strikes, and a head kick. Quite frankly, Conor looked pretty good.
He did. I've never seen shoulder strikes used that effectively before in a fight.
No, I mean, he busted open Cerrone's nose with one of them.
I think he broke his nose with the shoulder
strike. Yeah.
And along with that, I think Conor's really thinking of his marketability here because this is a 40-second fight and can be put up on Instagram.
Big time.
You know? So it can be shared all over the place. Listen, there were a lot of searches that were done on Google for this. It got an equivalent level to, like, the Super Bowl, basically, as far as searches goes. So you can be sure if this was the old way of pay-per-view, this would have been definitely over a million buys, if not more.
Right.
And I'm curious to see how many people, you know, if we're even going to get these stats from ESPN, because it's no different for us here in Canada. For those of you that don't know that are listening abroad or in the U.S., we still buy pay-per-views. You guys have to subscribe to ESPN Plus and then purchase the pay-per-view from them. So I'm very curious, you know, what the subscriber rates, what will happen here after this fight.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a little bit on social media about that, like a few posts saying, wait, why do I got to pay? So I got to pay again.
Yeah, it's not a good system at all. I really hate what I would be really pissed if I was in the U.S. and had to subscribe to a service just to see these pay-per-views. Because you're right, you pay for the service, then you pay again in order to get this. I don't mind if that is a way of getting it, but I still want the option to just, even if it's more expensive, just go drop my money on the pay-per-view to buy it. But luckily, I can just watch this fight on Instagram instead. what do you think, Joe? Where do you think McGregor goes next? Is it Nurmagomedov? After this, along with that, we also had Floyd Mayweather send out a tweet saying, let's do it again. There's rumors of Manny Pacquiao as well, if he wants to do some boxing exhibition. I personally have no interest in the boxing side of things, but I do think that if he steps back in with Nurmagomedov, he will be destroyed.
I agree, and it, the thing is, though, he did say in his post-fight, I think, I'm almost positive, he said he wouldn't mind staying at, like,
at this weight class, yeah.
But the problem with that is that there are killers in this division. I mean, you've got, Usman, the champion, you got Woodley, the former champ, you got Covington, who used to be the interim champ, like, all three, and then you've got Masvidal. So all four of those guys against Conor, I do not like Conor's chance against any one of them.
He's small. This was the division that he had the problem fighting Nate Diaz when he was at 170.
Yep.
You know, he did look good last night, but he looked good for 40 seconds. And the thing is, 40 seconds isn't testing his cardio.
Nope.
And his cardio is what's going to suffer if he has that much muscle mass on him. So if he goes into a long fight on a smaller frame, that much muscle isn't going to do him any favors.
Yeah, and traditionally, Conor's the kind of fighter who, he does well in maybe the first and second round, mm-hmm. but you hit those later rounds, now his power level goes down pretty substantially, once you get into the later rounds. So I would be very curious to see if he sticks at this weight level, because again, bunch of really tough guys. But I agree with you. He goes down to 155, and Khabib seems to be the fight, rematch.
Yeah.
I think Khabib destroys him.
Now, you know what the fight is, Joe? You know what the fight is?
What is the
at
fight?
At 170, and he should stay there. It is still McGregor and GSP coming
Absolutely,
out of retirement.
Yes.
There is so much money!
Big time money.
There is so much money. It's the perfect time. Just let this damn fight happen. I've been talking about this for years. This, let me tell you something, Joe. This is my new Undertaker sting, okay? Because I don't want to see that anymore. And I was talking about that for a decade. This is my new, I will talk about it every time McGregor's name comes up. GSP out of retirement versus McGregor. Yes, you just have to hope that McGregor beats him, which at this point, I'd probably favor him in that fight. Would you favor McGregor versus GSP now, or would you still favor GSP?
I would probably still favor GSP.
Really?
Because GSP is a more complete fighter.
Yeah.
That's why.
And he is bigger.
Yep.
I still think there's so much money. So he loses against Nurmagomedov, then he comes up, he fights GSP. They all make a whole bunch of money, and then they cheers with their proper 12s at the end. All good. All right, that wraps up our news of the week. Do keep in mind, though, we are 1 week away from the Royal Rumble. You probably wouldn't know that from watching WWE programming, because they're promoting it like garbage, but we'll talk about that in the next segment. I did want to mention, though, for those of you that are in the GTA, Rumble Strikes is happening. It is, of course, my wrestling-oriented comedy show. It's happening Friday, January 24th, kicking off your Rumble weekend. You can probably watch the NWA pay-per-view and then come out to this afterwards, because it's not till 11 p.m. Tickets are on sale at snmeradio.com or sundaynightsmainevent.com. Find it there. Along with that, for next week's festivities, here's what you're going to do. You're going to come out. You're going to see the Rumble Strikes on Friday night. Thank you. We're going to have a nice time. We'll have some proper 12 at the bar. Then after that, Bartender Dave and I will be doing a Worlds Collide podcast next week after Worlds Collide on Saturday night. And of course, Sunday night's main event will be live, taking your phone calls after the Royal Rumble next week here on TSN Radio. What a terrible build so far. Not to these shows, Joe, but to the Royal Rumble.
Oh, it's been not good at all.
No.
Holy.
We will get into that next. We're going to take a break and be back to talk about WWE TV this week and a lack of build to the Royal Rumble. That is next. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. You're doing so on TSN Radio. Into the fire!
Octo is an angry octopus. Usually he's quite surly.
What did you say to me?
But when he gets mad...
You ain't so smart, is you?
He becomes angry.
Go home and brush your sister's hair.
It's been said that his sour attitude is due to a slight disagreement with the Great Lakes Brewers.
Those guys better have eyes in the back of their head.
They said they would use 8 ingredients and Octo's beer would be 8%.
But it ain't!
Octo likes the number 8.
What's not to like about it?
The Brewers apologized for the 8, but that made Octo more irate.
Hey, you wanna go me?
Nevertheless, there's still something likable about Octo.
Your hat looks like a toilet.
Well, sort of.
Sit down!
Octopus wants to fight by Great Lakes Brewery.
That's right!
And Big Show now, just yanking the Monday Night Messiah back into the ring.
And the Messiah pleading for help from Buddy Murphy.
Oh, Seth Rollins gonna need a savior now. Look at the choke slam.
There's that huge fist, and here it comes.
Ready to unleash.
Oh,
what the heck?
Buddy Murphy! He did what Seth Rollins said.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. Right there, a clip of Buddy Murphy at the end of Raw, who is just sitting at ringside, hanging out, and has now become, Joe, what should I call it? Should I call it an apostle? A disciple of the Monday Night Messiah? Well, what do you think the term is going to be? Because they have branded Seth Rollins. I don't know how many times we heard Monday Night Messiah on Monday. Do you like it?
I like it. Not if you say it every single time when you refer to Seth Rollins, and then it just becomes like, all right, guys, we get it. You know. Yeah, in terms of this Buddy Murphy thing, quite honestly, I was not a fan of it.
I love it.
I
absolutely love this. But why are you not a fan of it?
You know what? Like, it was just, I would have liked to have seen a bit more of a better build than just him going, "Help us!" And then he's like, then he comes in afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, again, I'm not against him joining. That's not the problem.
Okay.
It was the way it was done.
Right.
That's what bothered me.
What I saw was, you know, okay, I think that, and I had pushed along from Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy having this feud, and they really have managed to, I think, break through and get themselves over and get noticed. And honestly, that is so tough to do in WWE in the middle of the card. Normally those matches happen and you're just like, oh, fast forward. But these two guys, especially on the last pay-per-view, they had a great match and it was the standout
Absolutely.
Of the show.
Yep.
So from there, by having Black beat Murphy again, really you've pushed down Murphy. But what it's actually done to me is it's elevated Black, and now Murphy is onto something new. And I think by joining this pack, whatever they're doing with Rollins here, making it four people, you've kind of erased the loss. And, you know, people have forgotten that because it's a new storyline that's taken place. So I think it really does help Murphy. Along with that, I don't care for the Authors of Pain, so I like the fact that Seth has someone else in his group, and factions work well with four.
You know what? Okay, and I'll give you that, but here's my other problem with this whole Seth Rollins thing. It's Seth Rollins himself.
Oh, so, I agree.
Like, unlike, say, Jericho, where, like, he is giving the rub to a Sammy Guevara, or, like, the, you know, Santana and Ortiz or Jake Hager, I don't feel that like AOP or Buddy are going to get the rub off of Seth. He's not, like, that's not working for me. Like, when AOP comes out, it's like, oh, I forgot they're with Seth because I don't even notice them. And I think a lot of that has to do that, like, I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, I don't think, like, Seth is giving the rub to anyone, and that's why I don't think this is going to work with Buddy Murphy either.
Okay, long term, right? Buddy sticks around. They form whatever faction this is, the Apostles. I actually like the religious imagery that can be done, and I've seen a bunch of memes already of Seth Rollins, a Jesus type thing, and stained glass.
Oh yeah, no, I don't have a problem.
I think
with that.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like the branding around it, and I think it's something new for him. Yes, you're right. I don't care for Seth. I think he's so unlikable in everything that he does. And I agree with you. I don't think Authors of Pain are getting that much of a rub. I see Murphy benefiting. And again, this is a lot of ifs, and that is what you always have to say in WWE. He sticks with him for a while, and ultimately the Buddy Murphy turn on Seth down the line, a year, 6 months, whatever. When he turns on Seth and they have that feud, to me, there is a great opportunity there for Buddy Murphy to be elevated from that, because Seth is so disliked and Buddy Murphy can be seen as the guy who turns on him, and the fans will love him because of that.
I hope so, because I do like Buddy Murphy a lot. So, but yeah, like right now, I not a problem him joining, just didn't like the way it was done. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
Also on, well, speaking of coming out of nowhere, on Monday night, so Rey and Andrade are having this feud. And don't get me wrong, I very much enjoy these two together. We've seen this years ago when Andrade first popped up to the main roster and they were working matches on SmackDown, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And listen, these two have something. They work well together. There was a botch last week, but now you have and I talked about this in the show last week, I monologued about it, with the fact that Andrade pulled off Rey's mask. And for some reason, next week, this is leading to a ladder match. Why? Why does this make any sense at all? And why is Rey Mysterio, 40-something-year-old Rey Mysterio, involved in a ladder match that is not on a pay-per-view?
Okay, so I'm glad it wasn't just me, because I remember when they said, we're doing the ladder match, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What is that? What is that foolishness? You know, like, it was just so random. And even, like, let's say they did go with a stip type match, whether it was a ladder match, and we'll get into the mask thing in a sec. I mean, really, it would make more sense. Do this at the Rumble. Like, that's your big show, right?
You bet.
That said, though, I mean, you did the thing with the mask. To me, a title versus mask thing is just that's just the most common sense booking, you know, booking angle to take. And maybe they do that at the Rumble, but this ladder match just seems like, why? Like, what's the point of it?
Yeah, and, you know, I mentioned Ray here because he is someone who is older, and if you're going to put him in a dangerous match, which also I disagree with because there's no necessity to put him in this ladder match here.
Well, and especially a week before one of your biggest shows.
That's also true.
Right?
They have done, I mean, we can segue over to this. They've done such a terrible job in building the Royal Rumble. Joe, you've been listening to me rant and rave about my love for the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. For more than a decade.
Absolutely.
It is my favorite event of the year, bar none. This is the one thing that even when I was kind of out of wrestling, I would still watch the Rumble every year. And I don't think that's just me. I think the Rumble is an event, much like WrestleMania, that people find their way back to wrestling to watch.
Yeah, no. You know what? It's funny you say that because the Rumble, like, I mean, obviously I watch Mania because it's Mania.
Yeah.
But the Rumble is actually, I would argue, my favorite WWE event. Because it's where everything starts, right?
You're right. It's where everything starts. Also, it's such a strong gimmick. And it's a gimmick. It's a gimmick match that hasn't been compromised.
Yep, absolutely.
You know that it always kicks off the year for WWE. It creates a contender. And it only happens that one time.
Yep.
And God forbid they start doing something else with it, because it's been pretty reserved, right?
Yep.
But normally, I don't know if it's qualifying matches or people naming, and originally this year, we had heard the fact that it was supposed to be 10 Raw, 10 SmackDown, 10 NXT. I've seen none of that.
Oh, so, really? Okay. Yeah, that's news to me, too. Like, I haven't seen anything about that.
No, right? But that was the way it was supposed to be laid out originally.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing those plans have changed. We've heard nothing about this on NXT because NXT has just been building up to Worlds Collide.
Yep.
And along with that, and I mean NXT UK had a show like last week as well. So there's honestly, we all know there's too much going on. And this, I can't believe I'm saying this. The Royal Rumble has been lost in the shuffle this year. And I think I would say for the first time.
No, you know what? It's true. Cause like, I mean, again, I know it's coming up, but there's all this other stuff around it. So it's almost being grouped in as just another pay-per-view,
right?
As opposed to being a special pay-per-view.
Yes.
Because that is one of your, you know, your tentpole pay-per-views.
It is.
Right?
It's number two.
Exactly.
It's number two. I mean, I'd argue because WrestleMania has it's just so long and so drawn out, but I mean that's because we have to watch things like WrestleMania, there's it's special. You know what's hurt WrestleMania? It's these damn Saudi shows.
Yeah, huge.
They're bigger than WrestleMania, according to the promotion, yeah, right?
Quote unquote, yes.
You're bringing back guys like Michaels. You're bringing back Goldberg, Taker's on them. Those are all special elements that before this Saudi deal happened were reserved for WrestleMania.
Yep.
And the Saudi shows have tarnished WrestleMania. At this point, the Rumble has not been tarnished. I'm really setting myself up here for this year. But we do have, I mean, the one interesting storyline going in is this Brock Lesnar storyline. Do you like what they've done here in regards to building Lesnar to throw him into this, possibly creating a challenger for Lesnar, which they do not have right now, and you could also create a winner to challenge, I guess, Bray Wyatt?
That's actually the way that I've been looking at this Rumble, especially since I heard that Brock was going to be number one. Yeah. I honestly just don't see him winning the Rumble coming in as number one. I think they're going to use that to set up his Mania match.
Paul Heyman said it was a spoiler that he was going to win.
Fair enough. But still, I just don't see it happening.
I think that it does give them, you know, as I said, they're the ability to do two different things with the Men's Rumble. And that's probably the way they're going to go. I mean, I don't know. And we'll talk more about this in the six-pack challenge later in the show. And we'll get into, you know, what we think is going to happen and who's going to book. But, you know, along with that, there are, what do we have here? About 23 spots taken right now, I think, at the time of recording this, which is on Sunday, which leaves 7 open spots. I hope they leave some open. One of the charms of the Rumble to me is always the surprises.
Yep, absolutely.
And honestly, the Rumble will be a home run for me. Do you know who I'm going to say?
Go ahead.
If Edge shows up.
Okay, that's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, because there was that moment where Edge did come back, and I talked about it last week on the show. I can't remember the year, but when Edge came back and surprised everyone.
Yep.
And if that happens again this year, it's a home run. Like that, and he eliminates Lesnar, and that's your match, even though probably not good for his neck considering the suplexes. But like, that is an awesome new program. Lesnar probably wins at Mania, but I don't care. I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I think it has not mainstream attention, but old, you know, lapsed fan attention as well. And it's a lovely surprise.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if Edge comes back. I've always been a fan of his. I'll always root for that dude. But, man, I really do hope he's okay, though.
I agree.
Like, his injury sounded pretty serious.
Spinal stenosis isn't something you mess with.
Yeah, exactly.
How about the Women's Royal Rumble?
Oh, geez. That's even a worse build. And like the men's build has been pretty bad. The women's build has been horrible because, the one person that I would say, and I mean, I don't think it's a surprise. I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, Shayna Baszler coming up. Has she even been confirmed for the Rumble yet?
Here's who's confirmed for the Women's Royal Rumble at recording time here. Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss, Nikki Cross, Sarah Logan, 26 participants to be announced. One week away from a Royal Rumble, 26 participants. And sorry, on the guy's side, it's 9 participants are still to be announced.
Right.
That is a complete and utter botch on the WWE's part.
Well, and again, let's expand this a little bit. You know, women's revolution and, you know, trying to get the women's, division up, you know, to that level.
Let's remember the women's division main event at WrestleMania this past year.
Yep.
Look and where it is now.
Exactly, right? So, I mean, the some of the, like, you know, the Becky Asuka thing has been a half-decent build, I think.
Oh, has it?
Kind of, sort of.
No.
I'm trying to be positive here.
No. Hold on. How did Becky Lynch make herself a star?
Actually, she didn't. I hated that promo she did.
Wait. What promo did you hate?
The one on Friday that she did.
You mean on Monday? You mean on Raw?
When she got the missed it? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Monday. Sorry about that. I hated it. Yeah, I thought it was terrible.
I thought it was brutal.
I think that Becky made her star upon I'll take on all... She turned into Conor McGregor.
Pretty much.
She's Conor McGregor. I'll take on all comers. Come out and fight me. I'm the Fighting Irish. I'll defeat you. I'll take on everybody. And then she won. Big surprise, she's a star. Now, all of a sudden, she's worried about an opponent. She's lost her... Becky Lynch, the take on all comers, has lost her confidence. Who wrote this? Because they should be fired.
Well, and it's not just that, too. Like, what really bothered me about the promo on Monday, she gets misted. She's like selling it hard.
Yeah.
Like I would argue overselling it.
Oh yeah, there wasn't much missed in
right.
eyes.
And then she comes up and she cut like if you didn't know she got misted in the eyes, she cut a pretty half decent promo, but it was like, no, you're supposed to be in pain and now you just cut this fire. No, this does not make sense at all. Like it was just really logically, it just made no sense to me.
Well, you throw logic into wrestling, especially in the WWE, and you're not in a good space. I mean, I really did think in particular, though, they've really blown it with this turn in the Becky Lynch character. It is not what made her a star. And that's hugely problematic in the way that they're building this. And honestly, you know, you look forward, I don't see Asuka winning here.
Nope.
She's a stepping stone.
Yep.
So, and then I think that, you know, the right move, especially coming off Survivor Series, is Shayna to win the Royal Rumble. That's a natural program. That's a protected star that you have had in NXT. Rhea Ripley defeating her, I don't think it hurt it at all.
Nope.
Plus, a lot of people watching didn't know about that.
Right.
Shayna is a great character. I think that's your program. Maybe she's a surprise, but she can't be a surprise when you have 26 surprises, as I just said. It's honestly, they've really dropped... Let's take note. Next year's, they really dropped the ball on category.
Yeah, absolutely.
Royal Rumble. 2020. Let's take a break. Let's come back. We'll talk about SmackDown when we come back because there's at least motivation behind a stipulation there. We'll do that next. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event right here on TSN Radio.
I'm Dan the Muffin. Bransky.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old folks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty parts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old fucks, tough guy.
I challenge The Fiend to a strap match at the Royal Rumble. What that means is he's going to have one end of the strap tied around his hand. The other end is going to be tied around my hand, and we're going to go to war until one man wins.
Tie me down. No one's going to tie me down.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. Jason Agnew and Joe Aguinaldo from All Elite Weekly joining me here in studio this week to chat about the week that was in television and preview Royal Rumble, I guess. We might as well, because WWE is really not helping you along. But that was a clip from SmackDown this week where you have Daniel Bryan versus The Fiend. We're going to see that match at the Royal Rumble. It is a strap match. A strap match, Joe. A classic match, a classic stipulation, and I'll at least give them this. They justified it. Way more so than we saw with Andrade and Rey and the Ladder.
I agree. I thought It made sense.
Yep.
As to why Daniel Bryan would want a strap match, you know, like that way he can't run away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that. In fact, like, you know, even like that whole segment with Kane and stuff, I thought that was entertaining. I thought that was a fun segment to watch.
Well, you know, fans would remember Team Hell No.
Yep.
And they know the link between Bryan and Kane, and it looked like Kane was out there to bait the Fiend.
Yep.
And they made reference to that. I thought it moved a little slow. And I, listen, as much as Mouth complains about the lights going out, my lights going out thing is trapdoor.
Right.
I hate that.
I just
can't. I don't know why it still exists. It doesn't need to happen. In this case, I guess it worked because we've seen it so many times. But nonetheless, it could have been done some other way. And yeah, so you saw the link, and then the justification to the match made sense. But ultimately, what it does end up with, Joe, is with The Fiend and Daniel Bryan in the ring again, probably with a red light.
Yeah, that's the other, I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah, it that's ultimately, I don't think, can deliver, and I don't want to see that match again. Honestly, there is no one that you can put The Fiend in a program with that I want to see a match with. That affects this, and it also, to go back to our Royal Rumble discussion, it affects what's coming out of the Royal Rumble, because the winner of the Royal Rumble, if Lesnar's taken out and a sidebar with Edge, as we've stated and should happen for the good of everyone,
right?
Then the winner of the Royal Rumble is challenging The Fiend, and that's a dead match. That's bad for any. I wouldn't want to win.
No, you know what? Like, there's nobody right now that I'm at all interested in hearing or in watching against The Fiend at WrestleMania.
But who do you think it's going to be?
You'll find out.
Oh, that's right. Okay. That's
right. No, in all honesty, like, yeah. This is not going to be popular, Roman Reigns.
I know. I think so as well.
It's the only thing from a WWE logic perspective that makes sense.
It's not a good choice. It is someone who the fans have already turned on, as we saw back at the Royal Rumble years ago in Philadelphia, where Daniel Bryan didn't win and they turned on Roman Reigns. Fans are no stranger to turning on Roman Reigns. Fans are no stranger to turning on Bray Wyatt. This is a recipe for a disaster.
Yeah, I'm very curious and at the same time scared to see what happens at this Royal Rumble.
I don't know. I think it's the like WrestleMania.
Yeah.
is going to be just, if these two are in the ring together, that's just immediate tune out.
Yeah, that's not going to be pretty.
Along with that, not only do we get Roman Reigns in the Royal Rumble potentially winning as we had suggested, but along with that, Joe, it's not enough to have him in there once. We get him a second time on the card, and we get twice the Baron Corbin, which Bartender Dave I'm sure loves. Baron Corbin, Roman Reigns, for all indications, in what should be a loser eats dog food match, is instead a no-holds-barred match, or falls count anywhere, or whatever the hell it is that every match seems to turn into anyway. I'm wondering if it's being done this way because they're in such a large stadium. They're in a baseball stadium, I believe, or like a very large stadium, so they want them to be able to just brawl everywhere and showcase that, because there's no motivation to this. There's no reason for this whatsoever.
Well, and that was the thing. Like, when they made the stip about, you know, like, so it was Reigns and Corbin at Reigns and Corbin SmackDown. No, it wasn't Reigns and Corbin. It was the teams, like, whoever won that match would have to.
Yeah, we get to choose the stipulation. Yeah, it was, right? I think, Bobby Roode.
Thank you.
And Roman Reigns, right? Yeah.
And so Reigns wins, and he's like, false count anywhere. I'm like, why? Like, what is the point of that? The dog food match makes the most sense, especially too, because, like, that's what they've been going around the circuit with the entire time, right?
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, so what they've been doing on the house shows is they have been doing the dog food match.
Yeah.
And there's a complete justification saying the promo's so, it's just so easy. It's, hey, Corbin, you shove dog food in my face, I'm going to make you eat it when I beat you. It's a dog food match. Done.
Yeah. Like,
how? It's not rocket science. It's so easy. You guys, WWE, you've built the angle and you put it in place, and then for some reason, you just decided not to finish it off properly. Another thing we had on SmackDown is we actually had this past week, John Morrison returned to the ring. I don't know why this bugs me so much, Joe. Maybe I'm holding John Morrison a little too high in my regard for him, but I've seen a guy go away, perform as Johnny Mundo, Johnny Impact, change his name constantly, but he's a high-flying performer who fans haven't seen for a long time. And to me, you can bring that person back. They're automatically going to get a huge pop because they've been away, and you can frame them however you want. And the way that WWE chose to frame them is a guy hanging out in a dressing room with The Miz. And then return, his first match is with Big E. I just feel as though he's been absolutely wasted, and he could have been interesting, and he's not.
Well, I mean, even the way they introduced him coming back, didn't they do that on some, like...
The bump. They had him on the bump, Joe.
Yeah, so,
yes.
Like, right out of the gate, maybe that was an indication of what they thought of him coming back. You know,
it might be that. It just might be that they have zero confidence in this guy, and really, he might have been just a signing to say, well, we're going to sign him because we don't want anyone else to sign him, and we'll just use him somewhere.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, the dude's got skills. I mean, he's okay on the mic.
I disagree with you completely.
Okay,
I think that he is someone who should be silent.
Fair enough. I'll say that he's mildly okay on the mic.
All right.
And we'll leave it at that.
All right.
But yeah, like, I understand the association with Miz. It's what they did, you know, way back. But like, it was way, way back.
Yeah.
Let's establish a bit of a character first before we even think about going back in that direction. Because, like, I vaguely remembered that whole Miz Morrison thing.
Back in that time, Miz was still the guy from the reality show who was wearing a fedora.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like that, yep. We've seen an evolved Miz. And listen, Miz has had some great moments between. I don't like the current state that he's in now because he's been made to just be a bad dad. When we saw Roderick Strong be the dad on NXT, dad doesn't work as a character, WWE. Titus is your dad, and he's not even on TV anymore. But to take, it regresses not only Morrison, but it actually regresses Miz as well.
Yeah, he doesn't need Morrison in this stage of his career right now.
Morrison needs to be a singles guy, needs to be allowed to do what, I know he's beat up, but he needs to be allowed to do his parkour-style stuff and go in there on his own as opposed to being saddled with The Miz and already made to be, not to say he was ever going to get out of the mid-card, but already made to be like mid-card mush.
Yep.
As opposed to mid-card special, fun, new, different.
Right.
He would have been better off debuting in the Royal Rumble as a surprise.
You know what? That's a better booking idea than coming in on the bump.
Because if you think about that, he's also the type of guy where he and Kofi could have done something special at the Rumble.
Right.
Then he's remembered for that, and then you take him wherever he goes. Put him in a program with Kofi.
Yeah, that would work too.
Have him destroy Kofi's magic moment at the Royal Rumble.
Oh,
and do something more spectacular.
That would be awesome.
Joe, this is not hard. This is not hard.
Not at all.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to dive into the career of Rocky Johnson. Dan the Mouth Lavransky will join us, more than just The Rock's father. Passed away this past week at 75 years of age. Dan Lavransky will join us for that. Don't forget, still in the next hour, Quinn McKay the reporter, the backstage interviewer from Ring of Honor, will be joining me as well. So excited to chat with Quinn McKay. She is fantastic. We'll have her on in the second hour. Stick with us. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. You're doing so on TSN Radio. Right now, you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, and you're hearing this ad. Yep, it's a commercial. And it could be your commercial. We've got sponsorship packages available to suit any budget, so I could be talking about what you're selling. For more information, email me, jason@snmeradio.com. Get the message out about your product or service to thousands of listeners via TSN Radio and around the world with our podcast. It all starts with an email to jason@snmeradio.com.
Quinn McKay, backstage at Ring of Honor, here in Buffalo, New York, for the War of the Worlds tour with The Allure.
That's right.
Ladies, everyone saw what happened with Kelly Klein tonight, and I'm sure everybody's wondering, do you ever have any intention of actually wrestling, or are you just kind of going to...
Is that even a real question?
Really? Who are you again?
So I'm a six-time former women's world champion. Do you think I'm going to be getting in the ring? Quinn, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd say that you're going to take
this. Do you remember what your question was?
Bye.
Okay. Back to Red Lobster you go.
I don't work at Red Lobster. I work at Ring of Honor.
Hey, girl, what you doing?
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. That clip right there, a little bit of Quinn McKay doing her thing in Ring of Honor. And that was actually one of the first clips I ever saw with Quinn McKay, where she was referred to as a Red Lobster employee by Allure. And we'll talk about that in the interview. My thanks to Dalton Castle for helping to put this thing together. It was just earlier today I had the chance to chat with Quinn McKay, and let's get to know her a little bit. She does great things. We're all really big fans of her on this show. She brings a lot of personality to being a backstage interviewer. Has had some comparisons to Mean Gene, like a female version of Mean Gene. I know it's high praise, but honestly, I really like what she does. Was very happy to talk to her. So let's get into it. A bit of my interview with Quinn McKay right here on Sunday Night's Main Event. Thanks for joining me today, Quinn.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. I'm stoked about it.
Well, I'm very curious about how everything came about. I mean, you're a relatively new performer to people listening to this show, but we have talked about you a lot because you do seem to make the most of every moment that you have on screen. But before we get into your character now, I wanted to talk about you. And, you know, pro wrestling is an industry like no other, and I'm just wondering how you found your way into it.
I guess it's sort of an interesting story. I played roller derby for about 8 seasons, so for about 7 years, for a small team in Springfield, Missouri, called Springfield Roller Derby. And I bounced around that for a while, and I did like a soft retirement because I was like, I just want to, like, I've beat up my body this long. I want to see what else I can get into. I want to see what other interests I can explore while my body is still young and spry. And I always really loved watching Beth Phoenix whenever I got back into wrestling in high school. She was a huge inspiration for me, especially whenever, like, I went off to college and joined roller derby. It was always because, like, well, Beth Phoenix, she's beautiful and she's strong and she can do all these things. And it inspired me to just kind of basically do whatever I wanted to do. So after I did my soft retirement from roller derby, I was like, well, I'm going to find a school and I'm going to learn how to take a few bumps, learn how to run the ropes and see how I respond to it. And if I like it, great. And if I suck at it, then you know what? No harm done. So I found this small school in Arkansas, which was this huge ordeal because, like, in Springfield, Missouri, I'm about 3 hours from everything. I think that Harley had moved his school to Troy at the time. That was about 4 hours away. And then in Kansas City and St. Louis, which are about 3 hours away, they had small schools. So I was like, that's way too far. So in Harrison, Arkansas, it's about an hour and 15 minutes away. I went and I took my first bumps. A man named Jason Jones actually taught me all of the basics. He's wonderful. And I just kind of never stopped.
I find it funny that you talked about being beat up from roller derby and then you thought wrestling was a good idea.
Yeah.
That hurts the body. I mean, we know you. I mean, how did you adjust? Did you expect the amount of wear and tear that was put on your body from wrestling as well?
I think I kind of expected it. So I went into it with this, not an ego necessarily, but I was like, I played roller derby. I can handle pretty much anything. And I was like, I remember in my pitch email to the man that became my trainer, I was like, I have theater experience, I have roller derby experience, so I'm no stranger to like falling down and having to get back up, and I have stage combat experience, so I feel like it's going to be a pretty easy transition for me. And I guess all of those skills did kind of contribute to me and my success, but didn't prepare me necessarily for the kind of destruction you rain down upon your body from professional wrestling. No.
Yeah, for sure. The bumps are definitely a whole different thing. You mentioned theater, you mentioned stage combat. You also have a bit of a background in radio. Those are all, I think that they're things that a lot of people don't think about in getting into the wrestling business in regards to character and performance, etc. But you've definitely maximized all of those skills. So did you go to school for theater, or how did that come about?
I actually went to school for anthropology.
Oh my God, you are. This is a very varied background, Quinn.
Yeah, it is a very varied background. I went to school for anthropology, and I was about a semester away from graduating with my major in anthro and my minor in biology, and then took a semester off and changed gears entirely. And I guess I had realized that I enjoyed myself more whenever I was sharing information with people, giving presentations on my research projects, than I did actually doing the research. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll give communication a try. So I ended up graduating with my Bachelor of Science in Public Relations and then a minor in Anthropology, which, of course, I use 0% of any day.
Well, I mean, you know, it's gone pretty well for you so far. I think you're doing pretty well, at least from what I can see from the outside here. So let's talk about, I mean, you went and you did the in-ring thing, and I'm guessing mm-hmm. you were working the indie scene and then found your way to Ring of Honor first as a performer, as an in-ring performer?
Yeah. I had actually only had one match ever in my independent career, and I went to a Jonathan Gresham seminar at St. Louis Anarchy in Alton, Illinois. And Gresh thought that I was athletic and charismatic, so he asked me to send over like a short bio and some headshots to send to the coaches of the Ring of Honor dojo, and I got accepted into the dojo. So I moved across the country to Baltimore and started attending there. And then I was there for about 2 months whenever they started talking about doing their first ever developmental contracts. And then I was one of the first people, one of the first five signed to that, and the first woman. So that was really exciting.
So at that point in your career, you're like, all right, things are going pretty well. You get signed with Ring of Honor. You're looking to do an in-ring career. Who approached you with becoming the backstage interviewer and this role?
So that was sort of just an idea that was bounced around by the entire creative team, I think, over a period of time. And then I think it was maybe Bubba, I think, mm-hmm. Bully Ray was the person that decided that I should go in like the super nerdy direction.
Right.
And then the rest of the creative team was like, we really need a backstage correspondent. We know that you have experience in broadcast and you might be kind of good at this. We just want to throw you in and see how you do. And I think I did way better than anybody expected me to. And then it just kind of took off. Like, I don't think Quinn was supposed to be as much of a character as she is. I mean, I'm glad that she is. I'm glad that I get the opportunity to do that. But I don't think that that was the expectation whenever the character was initially pitched. But I have no idea who it was actually that came to me the first time. It might have been Joey Mercury that actually bounced the idea off of me the first time.
Well, you said the Bully had the idea for the super nerdy character. Was that something that you were originally going to take as an in-ring character before it moved its way? Or was this in conjunction with, hey, you're an interviewer, try super nerdy?
Well, I think it was because I have such a bookish personality anyway. I'm very introverted and not necessarily like a quiet person, but I would say that a lot of Quinn's big character attributes are just, you know, like enlarged versions of me. And I think that every personality in wrestling kind of says that. Like it's parts of me turned up to 11 or whatever. Right. But I think that was just drawn upon something that I already was and then wanting me to capitalize on it as much as I could and lean in basically as much as I could, which has been really fun.
So how much did you, was this all you, okay, the glasses, the bow ties, the V-neck sweater vest, was that mm-hmm. all you, or did you work with someone on that?
Well, we had a couple of, so the thing with like the button downs and stuff like that, is I'm fairly broad shouldered. And I work out a lot, so I have a tendency to carry around a lot of muscle as well. And I think they wanted to play that down as much as possible so that I looked like an actual interviewer and not
right.
a wrestler anymore. So we went through a few different costume changes and was like, okay, keep this, add this. And I feel like my first go around, my big inspiration was Zooey Deschanel and New Girl. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, that's a little too trendy. It's a little too cute. We need to dial it back a little bit. The glasses are just because I legitimately need them to see. And then the bow ties were because I wanted to be able to show a little bit of personality, even being like covered up from head to toe.
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely worked for you. So in regards to the interviewing style itself, you know, a lot of people talk about, and we talk about here on the show, WWE being very scripted, and they do that with all of their on-air talent. How much you given, or how much is you with these segments? Do you know, because you have a real knack of hitting that button at the end of, dare I call it a scene, your interview, you always have that nice little end line when appropriate. Is that given to you? Is that you? Or does it just happen?
No, that just kind of happens. The majority of my interviews, unless it's done specifically for a TV spot and I'm given like a rundown of like, hey, we want you to hit this, this, and this, all of my interviews on social media are 100% improvised, which I think is really cool and has led to a lot more character development for even just like the wrestlers to draw on, because I like to draw stories out of people. And if I ask them the question beforehand, I feel like I don't get as an authentic answer to it.
Yep.
So whenever we turn the camera on, I have the, typically the first time that the person I'm working with has heard the question, that's the first time we've bantered, and then everything I do at the end is just sort of on the fly. Like, we might have to do a couple of takes if someone like messes up over their words pretty badly, but I'm not typically given anything. I have a lot of creative freedom, and I really appreciate that. Ring of Honor just kind of trusts me to get out the right kind of information, and I think that that's great. I dig that.
Yeah, and you've done a lot with it. And you're right, there is a certain authenticity in what you're doing. Even though it's make-em-up, even though it's improv, it does feel authentic with your interviews. I got to ask, though, the thing that keeps coming back with you is this Red Lobster line. And
yeah.
I think it was Allure. Was Allure the first one to mention Red Lobster?
Yes, yeah, yeah. I think it was Mandy, actually. I walked up for the first time. She was like, wow, you look like you work at, like, as a server at a restaurant, you look like you work at like Red Lobster or something. And I was like, you need to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. And that's, it just kind of stuck. I think that was the second interview I'd ever done. The first one was with PJ Black.
Yeah. I think, you know what? I found that interview with Allure and immediately was like, who is this interview? And then tried to find all of the possible clips. Just go, what, you know, what's ROH doing here? This is different. This is new. This is fun. And it's definitely a lot of personality. So, you know, you're in this position now and you're doing the interviewer thing backstage and it seems to be going very well. Are there plans to step back in the ring and move towards that direction, or are you happy with what you're doing?
I'm happy with what I'm doing. There aren't any current plans for me to get back in the ring on TV anytime soon. I know that. Not that have been discussed with me, at least.
Right. Well, listen, Quinn, I thank you for taking time out. I have to say, from me, from all the guys here, you made our best of list with best non-wrestling personality of the year.
Thank you.
Really, you're just a joy to watch. I'm gushing a little bit, but as a performer myself, you're fantastic. So thanks. Keep doing what you're doing, and thanks for doing it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. That means a lot. Thanks for having me on.
My thanks to Quinn McKay for joining me earlier today. You can see all of her stuff, actually, if you go to the Ring of Honor Facebook page and click on the videos. There's a lot of her videos there. And it was really cool to hear about how they're not planned out. And you can tell. And with a performer like that, with a bit of a theater background, and along with that, Quinn actually worked in radio as well. Turns out radio people, they can be talented on the air. And that is definitely the case with Quinn McKay. My thanks to Quinn for joining us. We have got to take a break, but when we come back, it's time. The six-pack challenge. Joe Aguinaldo back in studio with me. I will try to dethrone the champion next right here. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. Thanks for listening to the free version of Sunday Night's Main Event. Well, that was just hour one, but if you want hour two, then please sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's just $1 a week. You get the full 2 hours show, commercial free, and along with that, all of our bonus podcasts that include The Midweek Markout, All Elite Weekly, Sunday Morning Trivia, and Dan Lavransky's Music Show. All of that comes to you for just $1 a week. So go get it right now. Patreon.com/SNMEradio.